Do you guys have scrap paper? Okay, cool. Because there's, if you need some, there's some right there.
Yeah.
Okay, awesome. Do you like my meadow?
I haven't seen that much glitter glue since like middle school.
I had it.
What is this one? This is a project called. This is on the.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
that, my friend, is an image of real life.
The glitter glue.
Good morning, everybody.
You're Norman.
We are a small group today, as you can tell, so it might be good if we tried to occupy like the first three or four rows. That would be ideal for those of you sitting in the back. Move forward. You can do it. Also, does everybody have like something to write on, paper and pen? We're good? Okay, well, I only have one announcement this time, and that's that the last meeting of the Saturday morning math group or math circle for the semester is going to be May 5th with Dr. Hogger. So I hope you guys can all come to that. And today, it's my pleasure to introduce Claudia. She's going to talk to us about the predator prey model.
Thanks. Hi everyone, thanks for coming out. I know it's rainy. So today I'm going to be talking about how to mathematically model predator-prey populations. So you have two populations. You have a predator, say wolves, and you have prey, say moose, and you're trying to model the population dynamics of each population. So there's two ways to do this. So we're going to be using discrete time intervals, so we're going to partition time into chunks. We're going to say a minute, a day, a year. We're going to partition time into discrete, separated chunks. In practice, often people don't do this, and instead they do something called continuous time modeling, and they use differential equations. But today we're going to focus on discrete models. Okay, cool. So the first thing that we need to do is we need to understand what a discrete time model actually is. And I think the best way to learn this is to actually just do an example. This is our example. Does anybody know what this little cat is? Okay, what is it? It's an ion cat, yeah. I actually just learned this earlier this year, so I had to put it on the slide. So assume that currently 100 people know about an ion cat, and each year, each person spreads the word to 20 of their friends. And so then we want to say how many people know about Nyon Cat in n plus 1 years. And we want to write that number, so the number of people who know about Nyon Cat in n plus 1 years, as a function of how many people knew about him last year, and the year before that, and the year before that. And then we also need an initial condition, so how many people originally knew about him. So does anybody, do you guys want to take like a minute or like half a minute to think about what this model might look at like? Does anybody know? No? Okay. I'll give you guys this example. Okay, so that's the initial condition, right? Because originally 100 people knew about Nyon Cat. And then the model is going to be given by this. So SN plus 1 is the number of people who know about Nyon Cat in n plus 1 years. So the year after the nth year. And so then if you look at these terms, each person in SN, so in the number of people who knew about him in year n, told 20 of their friends. And so that's why we multiplied SN by 20. But the person themselves, they did not forget about Nyon Cat, so we had to add in SN again. And we ended up with 21 times SN. And so in n plus 1 years, 21 times SN people are going to know about Nyon Cat. And we have initial condition S naught equals 100 because originally 100 people knew about Nyon Cat. Okay. Does that make sense to everyone? Okay, good. Cool. So we're going to do an example. So this is you guys now. So I want you guys to maybe find a partner and figure out this problem yourselves. These questions were written as Mad Libs, and I had a friend fill them out, so that's why it says grotesque cheese balls. okay, so this year, 50 grotesque cheese balls will run for Gotham City's running team. If every year each participant convinces two friends to come along, then what is a discrete time model, including the initial condition, for how many people will be running on the team in N plus 1 years? So what do we want? We want to write Sn plus 1 is a function of Sn, just like we did on the last slide, and we want an initial condition. So do you guys want to work on that? I'm going to give you a minute. Karthik, you have to work too. Allison, should I hand out the calculators? Okay, cool. I'll keep one up here. Yeah. They're gonna need it for the next question. You just came in, right? Okay, so what we're doing in this problem is we're writing, so we're calling the population in the nth plus first time step, Sn plus 1, and we're writing it as a function of the population in the last time step, so Sn. So you'll see an example, and then you'll probably figure it out. Okay, cool. Okay. Is anybody ready to give an answer? Does anybody think they know? What do you think it is? Yes, that's way ahead of what we were gonna do. But yeah, no, that's for the first one, right? You were gonna get Sn plus 1 is equal to 3 times Sn, right? Which is how you got the 3 to the n. Yeah. So does everybody understand how we got this answer? Yeah? What is it? What? So Sn is the number of people in the nth time step. So we're basically just, we're calling S the population, and then we're indexing it according to what year we're in. So at the beginning, we're in S0, because that's currently, and then a year from now, we're going to have S1 people. So that's what Sn is. So in this example, just like in the last example, each person brought two other people, which is why we have 2 times Sn, and then they brought themselves 2 again, so that's why we added in another Sn, so it came out to 3 Sn. Okay, cool. And just so we like understand what exactly is happening here, does anybody want to tell me what the time step was in this problem? So like what periods of time are we actually talking about? So we're talking about what's the time interval that we're indexing here? Does anybody know? I mean, let's read the problem. What's the unit of time that's mentioned in the problem? Oh, do you know? Yeah, that's great. Yeah, yours. So that's that. Okay, and then if you want to figure out how many people are participating in 5 years, if you're really smart, you'll do what you did. does everybody have a little calculator? So in 5 years, try to figure out S5. And it's going to be a really big number. Okay, let's give other people like 30 more seconds. Does everybody kind of understand what they're doing here? Does anybody want to explain the process to me? Like what you guys are doing to figure out S5? Do you guys have an answer? Anyone? Okay. So why don't we have somebody explain to everyone just like what they did so we're all on the same page, okay? So do you want to explain to people what you did? Do you want to not explain, or do you want to explain, or just give an answer? Okay, cool. Does anybody else want to explain maybe what they were doing? Okay, sure. Right. So you multiplied by 3 5 times, right? And you did then times 50. Right, exactly. And then you got a huge number, right? Yeah. Okay, so the answer is actually 12,150, so you're going to need a lot of coffee. So let's do one more practice problem. This was another Mad Libs. My friend is a huge Star Wars nerd. So assume that currently there are 30 Bothans on Corellia, and every decade, 1 out of 5 Bothans decides to return home to Coruscant. However, if a Bothan decides to stay, they bring on average 4 more Bothans to Corellia. So then, what is a discrete time model for how many Bothans there will be on Corellia in the nth decade? So for those of you who don't know, the homeworld of the Bothans is actually, I think it's Coruscant. And Corellia is really not very multicultural, so this is good for Corellia. I'm going to give you guys another minute, okay? And then we're going to reconvene and compare answers. Okay. So I'm going to put up the answer, guys, and then I'm going to ask people to explain the terms to me, okay? So this is the answer. So does somebody want to explain to me the 4 times 4 fifth times SN term? Okay, yeah?
So if 4 of them stay, then each of them are going to be 4 more people.
Right. Right, exactly. So you're taking 4/5 of the population, so 4 over 5 times SN, and then you're multiplying that by 4, because 4/5 of the population are bringing 4 more friends. And so then, do you also want to explain to me why you're adding in 4/5 times SN at the end? Right, because they're staying. So, and then if you add these together, you get actually 4 times SN, which I was actually kind of surprised about, like how fast the population is actually growing in this model. And your initial condition is 30, because originally you had 30 boffins on Corellia. So who wants to tell me what the time step is in this model? Anyone? Anyone who hasn't talked yet, what's the time step? Yep.
10 years.
Exactly, yeah, it's a decade, yeah. So, good. Okay, so just as we did in the last problem, how many boffins are there in 3 decades? So now we're looking for S3. So, does somebody who hasn't talked yet want to explain to me the procedure for figuring out what S3 is? Just the procedure. You don't have to give a number. Okay. Somebody who has talked already, so do they want to explain the procedure to me again? Yeah, okay. Almost. So you're using the second equation, right? So you're using the first equality, right? So you want to be using the last equality because it's much easier, right? So you're also only adding in 4/5 of the original population because only 4/5 of the original people are staying, right? Right. And so if you wanted to be slick about it, what you would do is you would use the last equality and you would just do exactly what we did in the last example, right, guys? Because you would multiply, to get S3, you would just do 4 times 4 times 4 times your initial condition. So your original answer is going to, like, your final answer is going to be pretty big again. It's going to be 1920. So Corellia got more multicultural. Okay. So I want you guys to really understand what the time step is doing. Like, the indices n, so if I'm talking about Sn, the index n is, like, it's important because it's telling you how much time is passing between Sn and Sn plus 1. The time step is really important. I would get a wildly different model if I was talking about years and if I was talking about decades. So if I were going to ask you to write a discrete time model with seconds as a time step, I want you to figure out, like, just a question real quick with your neighbor that I could ask you to prompt a model with seconds as a time step. And then I'll have one group share at the end. Aaron, could you prep a group so that they can share their answer? Yeah. Well, what about the two girls right in front of you? Okay. So, okay. So, do you have a model that you wanna share? Okay. Does anybody have a model that they that has a second as a time step that they wanna share? Okay. No, Aaron, we have one. That's like that would have been mine actually. So bacteria reproduce really, really quickly. So if you want to write a discrete time model for how bacteria are growing, like the number of bacteria in the nth generation, then you could use seconds as a time step because they're growing so quickly. The population is they're reproducing so quickly. So that's a really good example. Okay. So up to now, we've been talking about discrete time models, and I've made a really, really big deal about the time step. But so really, all we've been looking at are difference equations. So these recursive relations where you express a subsequent term in a sequence by looking at previous terms. And so now, ignoring the time step for a second, I was thinking about, well, what is the most famous, you know, example of one of these difference equations? And does anybody know what the Fibonacci sequence is? What is the Fibonacci sequence? No. I just want the like the recursive relation that gives you. Right. Exactly. So you add. So each term in the sequence is the sum of the two terms that came before it. So. So this is actually going to give you a slightly more complicated recursive relation because now your SN plus 2 is dependent on two previous data points. So do you guys want to write down the recursive relation that would give you the SNth plus 2 term or the XNth plus second term? Does anybody? I mean, we've basically already said it, right? It's going to be xn plus xn plus 1 equals xn plus 2. So that's going to be it. And so to define the order of a difference equation, what you do is you look at, if you write down xn plus 2, you want to be looking at how many previous data points xn plus 2 depends on. So this would be a second order difference equation. And the previous ones that we've been working on, they were only dependent on one previous time step, and those were first-order equations. So if I asked you to write down the first 10 terms of the sequence, given only the information that I've told you, could you do it? Could you do it? Using only the information I've given you? No, right? What do you need to write down the first 10 terms? Yeah, you need the first two, right? Yeah, you need because in order to get the sequence started, you need two numbers. So I have to tell you what the first two terms of the sequence are. And in general, if you have an nth order difference equation, you need n initial conditions. So previously, when we were doing these population models, we had one initial condition, right? We just had the initial population. And in this example, because it's second order, we need two initial conditions. Okay. So I'm going to tell you that the first number and the second number are one and one. So once I tell you that, you should be able to write down the first 10 terms of the Fibonacci sequence. Do you have an answer for the first 10 terms? Have you written them down? Or like the first 5 or something? No? Okay. Okay. So I'm going to put them up and we can talk about it real quick. Okay. So if you look at each term, so for example, 13, it's the sum of the two previous terms. So it's the sum of 8 and 5. 21 is the sum of 13 and 8. 34 is the sum of 21 and 13. And you keep going this way. And this is a really, really famous sequence. And one of the reasons it's so famous is because of the golden ratio. And has anybody read the Da Vinci Code? No? Okay. I guess that was my generation. So in the Da Vinci Code, they make this big deal about the golden ratio, and usually mathematical biologists like really love the golden ratio, or at least, I mean, I'm not a mathematical biologist, but I thought it was really cool in middle school. And so the golden ratio, it has this folklore around it that says that people find it very, very pleasing. So, for example, if you have a rectangle and you take the ratio of its sides and you get the golden ratio, people think that that's a very pleasing shape. And if you show people a bunch of rectangles and ask them, which one do you want to frame your picture in, they'll usually choose the golden rectangle, just because it's such a pleasing proportion. You can also find it everywhere in nature. So if you look at leaves or the angle at which leaves are growing out of stems, that'll actually be the golden angle, which is which is related to the golden ratio, and it's just all over the place, and people love to talk about it because it's so mystical. But its approximate value is 1.618. And so, could you guys use your calculators to divide, say, 13 by 8, and then 21 by 13, and 34 by 21? So like, xn plus 1 over xn. And then tell me what you observe. So did anybody figure out what's happening yet? You're right, yeah. The ratio of, like, so n plus 1 over n, that number, that ratio is getting closer and closer to the golden ratio. And they're gonna approach the golden ratio. As you go, you go to infinity, those ratios are going to approach the golden ratio. And so that's one reason why the Fibonacci sequence is interesting. So now that we are on the topic of the golden ratio, it's a really fun topic, so I wanted to talk a little bit more about it. So the first thing that we're going to do is, in order to do this next activity, we have to do one quick little proof. But I'm pretty sure you guys can do it. So so the exact value of phi, the golden ratio, is actually given by 1 plus square root of 5 over 2. And what we want to do is we want to be able to say that that if I have a golden rectangle, so the ratio of the sides, so the ratio, so the length of the line segment BD over the length of the line segment BA is going to be equal to the golden ratio. That's a golden rectangle. And if I take out the square, BACF, or BAFC, then you're left with another little rectangle, the pink one, right? And we want to be able to show that if the big rectangle was a golden rectangle, then that little rectangle is also a golden rectangle. But in order to do that, we need to know this identity, this 1 over phi minus 1 is equal to phi. And so knowing the exact value of phi, let's think about how maybe we can prove this identity. So I'm going to give you a minute to talk amongst yourself. I'm going to give you a hint. You're going to use the quadratic formula. So you're going to solve a quadratic equation. Okay, here. And there's a hint. Do you guys know the quadratic formula? Okay, good. Okay, other one, good. Okay. So let's make some observations real quick. If some value satisfies the identity that we want to prove, right, then by multiplying both sides by phi minus 1 and subtracting 1 from each side, you notice that it will also have to satisfy this quadratic equation, right? The x squared minus x minus 1. And likewise, if you have a solution to that equation, then you know that it satisfies the identity, right? So if you can show that the exact value of phi that I gave you is a solution to that quadratic equation, then you know that it satisfies that identity as well. So, did anybody use the quadratic formula and figure out that that is in fact a root of this equation? Yes, okay. So does everybody understand how to prove that identity? So then, using this identity, if I told you that ABDE is a golden rectangle, then I want you to prove to me that CFED is also a golden rectangle. So if I have the big rectangle that is a golden rectangle, so I know that A plus B over A is equal to phi. And I want to know that, B over A, or A over B, is also equal to phi. So, so using that identity, we should be able to prove that. Right, because so if this is phi, then 1 over phi minus 1 is just going to be 1 over a plus b over a minus 1. And that's just going to be equal to 1 over a minus a plus b over a, which is just going to be equal to a over b. Right? Which proves this. This is what we wanted to prove. We wanted to prove that a over b is equal to phi, and we knew this. And we also knew that phi is equal to this. Mm-hmm. Because we said that that's a golden rectangle. We said that the big rectangle is a golden rectangle, which means that a plus b over a is equal to phi. That's the definition of golden rectangle. What? No, it would equal 1.618. Right, so it would equal the golden ratio. Yeah. And so using the identity that we derived, you can show using this method. So this is what you know. Because the big rectangle is a golden rectangle, you know this. And you want to show that the small rectangle is a golden rectangle, the pink one. And if you look at the ratio of those sides, that's just a over b. Yeah?
I think there's a simpler way to do it with a picture.
Okay, sure. Do you want to show us?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, sure. That's really cool. Okay.
First, I'll need to do a bit of writing, so you can continue.
Oh, yeah, sure. Okay.
While I do this.
Okay, sure. Okay. So while he's doing that, why don't the rest of us, we're going to construct the logarithmic spiral, so the conch shell spiral that you always see when people talk about the golden ratio. So I need a volunteer who's also going to come up and draw. Does anybody else want to come up and draw? Do you want to come up? Okay. So okay. So what we're going to do is we're going to follow exactly the setup, like, here, come over here, and we're going to do exactly what they're doing on the board, and we're going to take out the square, so it's about here, okay, and then what you're going to do, okay, here. You can come over here. You can draw this line. Yeah. Okay. No, sorry, connect those two dots. So here, use the ruler. There you go. Okay, good job. And so then what you're going to do is you're going to draw this circle right here. So like that, right? So you wanted a circle that has center right here, and you want the radius to be this distance. Okay. And so then the next step, so this is a golden rectangle again, right? We just proved that this is another golden rectangle. So then could you take out another square?
Yeah.
Okay. So take out the square off the top.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So do you want to show us what you did?
Okay. I took the original rectangle 1/5 because you can just enlarge or shorten.
Uh-huh.
So, since this is a square that I chopped up, this length is 1, this length is 5, therefore this is 5 minus 1, and this is 1.
That's really good.
So, if we shift it over here, the given statement that you have up there on the board says that 1 over 1, 5 minus 1 is 5. Therefore, given by that statement, we have this is a golden rectangle.
Oh, that's awesome. Good job. Okay, so what he did is he multiplied to get an equivalent rectangle. And because you know that, because you know it's a golden rectangle, you know that the ratio of the sides is going to be given by phi. So long side over short side is going to be equal to the golden ratio. So he multiplied to get the same proportions. And then what he did is he took out the square, which is then going to have side lengths 1. And then what he's left with is phi minus 1 on the top for this piece and 1 right here. And then he just took the ratio of those two sides. And then by our identity, we get our answer. So that's really cool. okay, cool. Okay, so what you do then, right? Mm-hmm. And so what we're doing here is we're constructing the golden spiral. So when you see examples of the golden ratio in nature, they often show you a conch shell. So what that is the reason they show you that is because it's the golden spiral. And what we're doing is we're taking out successive squares out of our golden rectangles, and then we're drawing a curve like this. So here, I took the center here, and I took the radius here, and this is the square I've taken out of the big rectangle. And then I've drawn that circle. And now, you have taken out the square right here, right? Mm-hmm. So then, what do you want to do? You want to draw, like... You want to do that? Okay, awesome. Oops. Did it go in? Yeah, you're doing great. Okay. So what should have happened is it should have fit right here, right? Okay, so if it were to hit right there, then what we would do is we would take out we would take out another rectangle, right?
Yeah, I guess we can.
Yeah, so let's not actually do it. Let's say that that's the rectangle, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then say that. So this was the first square we took out, and we drew the spiral in it. This is the second square we took out, and we drew the spiral in it. And what should have happened but didn't because of some error, is this arc, which is just the piece of the circle that has center here, and this radius, should have hit right here, because this is a square.
Yeah.
And, but it didn't, which because of some error. And so, but what you do then is you take out another square. So you take out this, for example. And you take your compass, and you say, okay, well, say that this arc actually did hit here. You would take your compass and you would draw this, the rest, this spiral, and you would keep taking out squares. So you would take out another square here, and then you would draw, oh, this should have hit right here, and you would draw this arc, and you would keep doing that, and eventually what you're going to get is you're going to get the logarithmic spiral that you always see in the conch shells. So thank you very much. Okay, thanks. Yeah, thank you. So that's cool. So now we're actually going to go back to the original thing that we were doing. We're going to now interpret our difference models, our discrete time models, in terms of populations, so population dynamics. So after the problems that you did previously, this one should be pretty easy for you. Say that I tell you that initially we have a population of, say, 200 parakeets, and each year a couple of parakeets will get together and they'll have 3 kids. So I'm going to ask you, what is a discrete time model that would model the parakeet population in subsequent years? So we want an Sn plus 1. We want to write Sn plus 1 as a function of Sn. They're going to all stay alive. So this is in the absence of death. So we're going to assume everyone stays alive. I know it's unrealistic, but right now we're going to assume it. Okay. But we're going to add in a death term in the second half. Yeah?
Did you already say that one of them is male and one
female? Oh, we're not going to worry about male and female ratios. We're just going to assume that it's 50-50. Yeah. So, I'm going to put up the model. So this is exactly what we already did, right? So our growth rate is going to be 3 over 2, because each couple is getting together and producing 3 children. So that's so each parakeet individually is only producing 1.5 new parakeets, but as a couple they're producing 3. So then you derive this model, and the first term is the reproduction, and the second term comes because the parakeets themselves are not dying. And then you're left with this. You're left with 5 over 2 times Sn, and the initial condition is 200. Yeah? I'm sorry? Oh, because, because Sn is the total population, and, so you're dividing by 2 in the first term, because I told you that a couple of parakeets is having 3 new parakeets. So each parakeet individually is only yielding 1.5 new parakeets. As a couple, they're yielding 3. Yeah?
So you're assuming that it's equal?
Yes. I'm assuming equal gender distribution. Yeah?
So at some point, there's going to be half parakeets that...
Yes. At some point, there will be half parakeets. Yeah? Yeah, you could totally write 1.5 times Sn. Yeah, that would be right. But as somebody already pointed out, this model is pretty unrealistic because we haven't added in a death rate. So if I were to tell you that in every time step, 1% of the parakeet population dies, and if you die, you not only don't move on to the next time step, you also do not reproduce, then what would be the new model? Yeah. They die at the beginning of the year, so they can't reproduce. Yeah, so the parakeets that are dying do not reproduce. Yeah.
One gets fed to my cat. 1% gets fed to my cat.
So it's 1%. I'm saying they cannot breed the population that's dead.
Well, I mean, so they're not only moving on, they're not moving on to the next time step, right? So that's going to influence the second term, and they're not reproducing, which is going to influence the first term. Yeah. So I'm going to put up the answer, and people are going to explain the terms to me, okay? Okay, so that's the answer. Does somebody want to explain the terms to me? Karthik, do you want to explain the first term to me? Yeah, and so the first term right there, right, the 0.99 times Sn over 2, that's happening, that's our reproductive term. And the reason we're multiplying by 0.99 before we multiply by 3/2 is because only 0.99, like only 99% of the population is reproducing.
Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter if they die or not.
If they die, then they're not only moving; they're not moving on to the next time step.
But it doesn't matter if they die or not.
Oh no, it doesn't. Yeah. Well. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. That's a typo. That's a typo. I'm sorry. That's a typo. Yeah. No. 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 You're totally right. It is not equal to 5/2 times Sn. You're totally right. So the last equality is a typo, but if we just look at the middle equality, the reproductive rate, so the reproductive term, is the 3 times 0.99 times Sn over 2. And the reason that is the reproductive term is because 99% of the population is reproducing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that works too. That's the same thing as 0.99 Sn. So 0.99 Sn is 99 over 100 times Sn, right? It's just like converting decimals to fractions. And what you wrote is exactly that, just like the equivalent thing. You wrote Sn, so 100 over 100 minus 1 over 100 times Sn, which is 99 over Sn, 99 over 100 times Sn. So you did the right thing. That was right. And then you add in the 0.99 times Sn again, right? Because you're adding in the parakeets that didn't die and reproduced. Okay. So
it's 5/2 times 0.99 Sn.
Yeah, yeah. It's 5/2 times 0.99 Sn. Okay, cool. So now we're going to do what you wanted to do at the beginning. The model that we basically have been deriving over and over again is next time step is equal to constant times previous time step. And we have an initial condition S naught. So if I told you that you wanted to find S5 again and you didn't want to go through and multiply, you could try to express Sn purely in terms of S naught, right? Because what you're doing, right, what you guys were doing when you were figuring out S5 is you were saying S1 is equal to B times S0, and you were putting that into your calculator, right? And then you said, well, S2 is equal to B times S1. But if we just plug in this for S1, if we plug in this right here, then what we get is that S2 is really just equal to B squared times S naught. Right? And then if we wanted to find S3, well, we know that S3 is equal B times S2. But we know that S2 is equal to B squared times S naught. So S3 is just equal to B to the third times S naught. So in general, what do you guys think Sn is equal to? If S3 is equal to b to the third times S0? Exactly, it's b to the n times S0. Yeah, that's perfectly right. And this is called exponential growth, and it happens really, really quickly. As you saw, like in all these models, our numbers have been growing really fast. But now let's interpret this model a little bit. So assuming B is positive, so it's not negative, you're not getting like weird oscillations. For what B would the population increase, do you guys think? Yeah? Well, it's going to be greater than strictly increasing. Yeah, then it's going to be... Yeah. Yeah, no, you want B to be strictly greater than 1 to get increase. If you wanted it to stay the same, what would you do? Yeah, exactly. It would just be equal to 1. So B would be equal to 1 and the population would be constant. If you wanted your population to decrease, what would you do? Yeah? What? Well, you want... So we said that if you wanted it to increase, you want B greater than 1, right? And to stay the same? Exactly. You won't be less than one. Yeah. So in order to get population increase, we need B greater than 1. To stay the same, we need B equal to 1. And to decrease, we need B less than 1. And I'm not going to make you make this graph. So basically, if you let B equal to 2 and you let S naught be equal to 3, then you get a graph that looks like this. It's like your population is exploding, and you get basically exponential growth. Okay, so to impress upon you guys how fast this exponential growth actually happens, I mean, you look at this equation and you're thinking, well, 2 is a small constant, you know, my growth is not going to happen that quickly. But this blows up in your face really, really quickly. So, for example, if we had a chessboard and I told you that we were going to put a grain of rice on the first square, then we're going to put 2 grains of rice on the second square, 4 grains of rice on the third square, and we're just going to keep doubling, then on each square, so if we let your upper left-hand corner have 1 grain of rice on it, and we call that S naught, then on the nth square, we're going to have 2 to the n pieces of rice. And the question then is, how many pieces of rice are going to be on the chessboard in the end? Yeah? So a chessboard has 64 squares, right? But we're calling the first one S naught. So it's going to be 2 to the 63, right? Okay, yeah. But we're not looking for the number of pieces at the end. We're looking for the sum of all the pieces on the board. So what would you do? You would just add them all up, right? Right, yeah. So you're going to get all the pieces of rice on the chessboard, you're going to look at a sum like this. And you're going to take it out to 2 to the 63rd, which is a really, really big number. And off the top of your head, like, this would be a pretty hard sequence to sum up. If you just took a calculator and you typed in numbers and started trying to do this, it would take you a long time. So one thing that you can do as a trick to sum this up is you can look at 2 times S minus S. So if you just write out what 2 times S is going to be, that's just going to be the sum from N equals 1 to 64 of 2 to the N. So you're going to shift your sequence 1 term. Does that make sense to everyone? Does that make sense? Okay, cool. So then do you guys think that... So if you write out 2 to the S minus S, what do you get? What are the 2 terms that you're left with? Okay, I'm going to let you guys figure this out, because you guys are capable of figuring this out. So just... why don't you write down the terms, like what you're actually subtracting?
In a little while, we should take a break.
Okay, sure. Yeah, I'll end after this slide. Okay. So, did anybody get an answer yet? Okay, what do you think it is?
I think approximately 1 for the first one.
Uh-huh.
The value of number of rice grains at the end, just a moment because I was told approximately 9.22337.
What did you think it was?
That's the total.
Oh, okay.
The total would be 2.
Yeah, it seems like it's off by a factor of 2. So before we go to the exact number, I'm going to explain this 2 to the 64 minus 1 to everyone. So right, we said that S is equal to I from 0 to 63 times of 2 to the I, right? This is what we said S is equal to. So then if we multiply through by 2, then what does that do? Well, it shifts each one of these and it shifts each one of these terms of the sum up by 1. So what I mean by that is, let's actually multiply it by 2. So 2 times S is equal to I from 0 to 63, 2 times 2 to the I. And what is 2 times 2 to the I? Well, 2 times 2 to the I is just equal to this sum. And then you add, so this becomes 2 to the I plus 1. Okay. And so now, once we have this sum, what you can do is you can just re-index it, and you can say, well, I can, this sum is the exact same thing as if I let, if I take this sum from I equals 1 to I equals 64, and then I can get rid of the plus 1. So it just shifted the sequence one square down. And so then what you do, when you take 2s minus s, you take this sum, so there's only 2 terms that don't cancel, right? You're left with the I equals 0 term and the I equals 64 term. Because every other term appears in both sequences. And if it's in this sequence, it's getting subtracted out in this sequence. Yeah?
Shouldn't it be reversed?
Oh, no, yeah, you're totally right. I'm sorry. okay. Yeah, you're totally right. so the only term that isn't getting subtracted off here is I to the 64th. Because everything else is also in this sequence. And then the only thing that isn't canceling in this sequence is I equal to 0. And so this is just equal to 2 to the 64 minus 2 to the 0, which is equal to 2 to the 64 minus 1. And that's how you sum up a sequence like this. It's a trick. And so the answer is that huge number. actually, that's more rice. Like, if you piled all that rice up, it would be higher than Mount Everest. That is 10,000. Like, I think it's 1,000 times the rice yield of the entire world in 2010. So, I think like when I was talking to my dad about this problem, yeah, you'll never need more rice. but it's a huge number, and the thing to take away from this is that exponential growth happens really, really quickly. And usually in nature, we do not observe exponential growth for a really long time because it would just be overwhelming. I mean, an ecosystem cannot support this much of anything. So I'm going to leave you on that, and you can go get cookies and I'll have a snack break. Okay, guys, is everybody ready to start again? Thank you. So now that we've seen how fast exponential growth like actually takes hold, so how fast populations start to blow up, I mean, can anybody think of a reason? I think why? Yeah. Right, exactly. So every system has a carrying capacity. What that means is there's a maximum number of organisms that a system can support given the nutrients. So instead of having exponential growth, usually what we have in nature is something called logistic growth. And it satisfies this equation. And what's happening here is K is the carrying capacity of the system. So K is the maximum number of organisms. So as Sn, the population in the system, gets closer and closer to K, the curve is going to start leveling off because the reproduction is basically stopping. Do you have a question? Or, no? Okay. And I put the gas pump because if you talk to my dad, you'd think that that's the limiting resource in the world right now. So this is logistic growth. So before we move on to the example, does everybody see that when Sn is low, 1 over k, like Sn over k is going to be really, really small. So then your reproduction is basically going to satisfy the exponential that we derived before. But if Sn becomes close to k, you're basically going to have no reproduction. And your population is going to level off. Okay, and this is called logistic growth. So this is an example. So say that we have two bunnies, and a bunny couple has, I guess, two new baby bunnies each month. And actually, the gestation period of a bunny is actually just a month, which I thought was crazy. And say that the carrying capacity of their environment is 20 bunnies. So we could go through the first 7 iterations of this model, but I don't think I'm going to make you do that. So basically what happens is the differences between subsequent terms, like you're going to get a graph that looks like this. So this is the SNs over time. So you're going to start off with something that looks a lot like the exponential growth that we had in the previous examples. But then as SN becomes bigger, that term, the term that was, it was R times SN times 1 minus SN over K. So as SN becomes close to the carrying capacity, this reproductive term becomes smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller, which is why we see this leveling off of the curve at the end. And so if you look at any kind of ecosystem where you don't have a predator-prey interaction or have something else complicating things, this is the kind of curve you'll get because they're saturating their environment and they're using up all the resources. And so eventually they can't really reproduce anymore. Okay. So what are some other things that satisfy logistic growth? So a few interesting examples that I found were people actually use logistic growth to model tumor growth. So if you have a tumor, then it can either be vascularized or unvascularized. And what that means is it either can have veins going through it or no veins going through it. And if it has no veins going through it, then the tumor cells in the tumor, they still need access to nutrients, which they get from your blood. And so the tumors can only get really small because the tumor cells in the inside of the tumor, they still need access to those nutrients. So the carrying capacity is really low. And so you can model tumor growth using the logistic model because you have this carrying capacity for reproduction on the tumor cells. And you can also model bacterial growth with the logistic equation. And you can also actually model language change over time. So if I were to throw out a phrase today, a new phrase, you know, like cool or like, you know, a certain phrase, and it were to catch, what would happen is initially a few people would adopt the phrase, and then there would be this big explosion of people adopting the phrase, but then it would start to level off again. And so it also satisfies logistic growth. So logistic growth is really, really, really useful. And it you see it everywhere in the real world. Okay. So now we're actually going to get to predation. So predation complicates population dynamics even more. because previously we've only been talking about uncoupled difference equations. So a population has only been dependent on itself. What that means is that if I'm talking about the bunny population, then the bunny population in the nth plus first time step was only dependent on subsequent bunny populations. But if you have predation, then the bunny population in the nth time step is also dependent on the population of the predator. So now we need two equations. We need an equation for the predator population and an equation for the prey population. And they're going to be interacting. And so when you do a model like this, there's a lot of assumptions you have to make. So I think in mathematical biology in general, you have to make a lot of assumptions just because biology is something we don't really have a handle on, a firm handle on, and you have to always oversimplify the system. But usually this doesn't ruin major dynamics that you can deduce from your model. But so some of the assumptions that we're going to have to make here is that no other species are involved in the predator and prey life cycles. So to give you an example of why that's an important assumption, I was actually looking at some data. There's an island in Lake Superior. It's called Isle Royale. And it actually has the longest observed ecosystem of this predator-prey data. And it's wolves and moose. And if you look at the population graph, it's really erratic, and one of the reasons it's really erratic is because there's a tick that makes the moose die randomly. And so that really messes up the dynamics that you would predict in that system. So assuming that you don't have any other species interacting is really important. Okay, so that's one, and the other things that we have to assume is that the reproductive rate of the predator is completely dependent on how much they're eating. So if they don't eat, they don't reproduce. And if they don't eat, they die. If the predator population weren't there, then we would have the prey population just growing exponentially like we had in previous examples. Okay. So now we're actually going to figure out these equations. So say that the SN equation is the predator population and the LN equation is the prey population. So the first two terms we can kind of figure out. So the B times SN is just going to be our population growth. It's going to be actually the absence of population growth. You're going to be dying. So B is the parameter that describes how the predators are dying in the absence of prey. So how quickly are they dying when they don't eat? And then C times LN represents the population growth of the prey in absence of the predator. So, for example, if we had no predation in the system and we didn't have these extra functions F and G, then the predator population would be dying very quickly. And the prey population would be growing exponentially. So now we're going to try to figure out the predator term. So if I told you that the probability of one specific predator eating one specific prey was given by D, so the constant D, then on average, how many prey will a predator eat per time step? Does anybody think they can figure that out? So the probability that I eat a given prey is D. But say that there's three prey. So I have three chances. And the probability that I strike at each one of those chances is D. So then the number of prey I eat is going to be equal to D times 3, right? Because I have three chances and the probability of me succeeding is D in each chance. Does that make sense to everyone? So on average, each predator is going to be eating D times LN prey in each time step. So then, as a whole, the entire predator population is going to be eating D times SN times LN prey. Because each predator in the nth generation, SN, is going to be eating D times LN prey. So then the total number of prey eaten is going to be SN times D times Ln, right? Does that make sense to everyone? Okay. So, does somebody want to explain to me why if each predator is eating D times Ln prey, that D times Sn times Ln prey are going to be eaten in total by the entire predator population? Can anybody explain that to me? Exactly. Right. That's perfectly right. Yeah. Does somebody else want to explain to me why? So this G function is being plugged into the prey equation, right? And the prey equation is explaining how many prey you're going to have in each time step. So can somebody explain to me why I've decided to make G a negative function? Do you want to explain to me? Yeah. You can have your mom talk too.
Because whatever prey is eaten, that reduces the population of the...
Right, they die, yeah. So that's why... So that gives us... That completes the prey equation for us. What's left is the predator population, which is slightly more complicated. And, yeah, that wolf really wants you to figure this out. And so now we still have to figure out this F function. So we have kind of an idea of what this F function is going to look like. We know that it's going to look a lot like the G function looked. But now we need to take into account that the predator's reproductive rate is entirely dependent on what it's eating. And we want this F function to be somehow communicating the reproduction. So if I told you that H is the conversion rate between reproduction of the predator and prey eaten, then the first thing that we should figure out is what are the units on this H? Like, if the units don't make sense, then the entire equation doesn't make sense. So what do you guys think that the units on H should be? If it's expressing to me, if you give me a number of prey eaten and I multiply it by some constant and tell you how many pups are produced per time step. So then what do you guys think the units are? Yeah, it's going to be pups per prey. Because you're taking a number of moose eaten and you're multiplying by some constant and you want to be getting pups. So the constants on H, the units on H should be pups per moose eaten. Okay. And so if I tell you that H is pups per moose eaten, then what do you guys think that F of Sn times Ln should be? First of all, should it be positive or negative? Positive? Right, because the reproduction is increasing the wolf population. So it should be positive. And we already have an expression for how many moose are eaten per time step. So then how would we get from that to how many pups are produced? Right, you would just multiply by H, because H is the conversion factor between moose eaten and pups produced, and we already know how many pups are produced, so we just multiply by H. So D times Sn times Ln, that's the number of moose eaten per time step. And H is the conversion factor, which tells you how many new pups are produced per moose eaten. So you would just multiply H times the number of prey eaten to get the number of new pups per time step. Okay. So this model right here is the model that we've derived now in this corner. Why don't you talk for a minute and try to answer these two questions? Like, these are the major dynamics we want to observe. If the prey population So how will the prey population respond if the predator population is high? Like, if you look at this equation. So if the predator population is high, we're going to have really big SN, and the LN equation is the prey population. So that negative term, it's going to be getting bigger, right, as SN gets bigger? And so as just logically, off the top of your head, if I tell you that the predator population is really high, what do you think is going to happen to the prey population? Yeah.
It's going to become less and less because there's more to eat
there. Right, exactly. There's more predators, so more things are trying to eat them. So their population is going to decrease. And mathematically, you see that in the negative term in the LN equation, because as SN gets bigger, the D times SN times LN is going to be getting bigger, and you're subtracting that each time step. So yeah, that's perfectly right. And in the same way, if SN is getting smaller, you're going to be subtracting less each time, right? And the prey population is going to start going up again. Right. And so, analogously, you can do the same thing for the predator population. So the predator population, that's the SN equation. So if you had if you knew that your prey population was low, what would happen to the predator population? Yeah? Right, exactly. It'll start decreasing. So mathematically, why it's decreasing is because the reproduction term, so the H times D times SN times LN, that's going to be getting really small, and the death rate is going to start dominating the reproductive rate. And so we're going to see a decrease in predator population. And then when the prey population rises again, what's going to happen to the predator population? Yeah? It's going to increase, right? Yeah, because now all of a sudden it has prey to eat again, and this reproductive rate is going to start going up again. Right? Okay, so as you see... I can't get in. Yeah, could you unlock it? So these two populations are really interconnected. They're basically determining each other's progression. Okay, cool. And we're gonna see that in a simulation that I found online. I thought this was kind of cool. So we've upped predator aggression to 10, and we've put dependency really high, because we want the predator population to be almost entirely dependent on the prey population. And so let's see what happens when we start this. Okay. So what are the four things we said, right? The first thing we said is that if the prey population is high, then the predator population is going to go up. So the blue curve is the prey population. And if you look, the red curve is the blue curve is prey, red curve is predator. And when the prey population is really high, then you see that the predator population is responding, and that's when it starts responding. But then when the predator population gets really high, the prey population collapses. But then when the prey population collapses, the predator population collapses in response, because it doesn't have anything to eat. So you get these oscillations. So does anybody want to explain to me why when the predator population is really low, the prey population is going up? And where can you see that on the graph? Yeah, can you tell me?
So
I'm sorry, I can't hear you. What? What? No, are you sure? Okay. Aaron, what did he say?
So he said that if you might have heard what he said.
Okay.
So he said that when the prey population is high, the predator is low because it means the predator is just coming in. So it's sort of a backwards argument. If the prey population is high, it must mean the predator population is low because otherwise,
right? Yeah. Well, I mean, so when the prey population is at its highest, that's when the prey population is at its highest, that's when the predator population is starting to rise, right? Because all of a sudden these predators have so much to eat, which is kind of what you're seeing in this diagram. So you see where the spike is with the blue curve? You see that it's the red curve is starting to rise right there. So that is the dynamics you're seeing. Okay, cool. Okay. And lastly, we're going to play a game to see if we can replicate this dynamics by ourselves. our game is going to be bunnies versus wolves or lynx, which are big cats. And this green thing is our meadow. And what's going to happen is the pink chips are bunnies. And I'm going to put down three bunnies to begin with. And they're going to go into three squares, or just like wherever they fall. Okay. And then I'm going to have the blue chips be foxes. And what lynxes, sorry. And so what happens is if a lynx falls into a square, it eats all the bunnies in that square. The lynx needs to eat to survive. If the lynx doesn't eat, it dies. If the lynx eats three bunnies, it reproduces, and we get a new lynx. So we're going to see what kind of dynamics we're going to get if we play this game. And I'm going to be Team Bunny, and you guys are going to be Team Lynx. So, and after each time step, the bunnies reproduce, and we're going to double the bunny population. So let's see what happens. So I'm going to have, who wants to be on Team Lynx? Okay, you guys want to come up? Okay, you can come up too. We can have three people on Team Lynx. okay, cool. So unfortunately, you guys are going to have to die a couple of times in the beginning to up our predator up our prey population. But after that, everything's going to be cool. Okay, cool. So the first step, right, you guys are the blue chips. And the first time when we throw, there's no way you're going to eat three bunnies. And you're probably, and the population is probably going to die, right? So do you want to throw the first time?
Okay.
So let's say it was in that square. So the lynx died that round. So we have generation 0, 3 bunnies, 1 lynx, 0. Lynx surviving 1, new baby lynx 0. Lynx starved 1, rabbits left 3. Okay, so now the lynx has died. sorry, guys. And now we're going to put in 3.
Those of you, keep it
square. Okay. Here.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you, Aaron. Okay. So what's going to happen now is the bunnies are going to reproduce, and the bunny population is going to double. So I'm going to be the bunnies, and I'm going to throw my chips in. And then say, because we're cheating a little bit, we're going to say that the lynx, a new lynx, migrates to the meadow. So do you want to throw the new lynx? Okay. You can try to aim for the bunnies. Okay. So the way we're going to play this game, we're going to say if there's any reasonable doubt that a lynx ate a bunny, it ate the bunny. So I'm going to give this one to you, even though it's, like, really small. Okay. So now you can keep a lynx. Okay, Aaron, so that bunny died. Okay. Okay.
Okay, so one bunny died in the second generation.
One bunny died in the second generation, and one lynx survived. Okay. So now, since there's 5 bunnies left, they double. So Team Bunny is going to put 5 more chips on the board. Okay. And Team Lynx now has two chips because one new Lynx immigrated and one stayed alive. So do you guys each want to throw one? You can aim for the bunnies, but you have to, like, keep it, like, at least an inch over the board. Or, like, 2 inches. Okay, yeah. Well, I'd say you got a bunny. Okay, so you guys both got bunnies. Okay, so two Lynx survived and two bunnies died.
Got three rabbits.
And she's doubling the rabbits. She's doubling the rabbits each time, so five rabbits. First generation, five rabbits.
Okay, let's wait for him to catch up.
Five rabbits?
In generation one.
Generation one, I see. Okay.
I doubled the six.
Well, okay, so this would be the initial number of rabbits, so that would be six. That would be one, and then you have rabbits surviving two.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, okay. So Team Bunny dominated the first round.
Okay, so no rabbits caught, no Lynx survived, rabbits survived.
One Lynx survived the second round.
Oh, yeah, the second
round. Yeah, okay.
So.
And one Lynx survived, and five bunnies survived. And then generation two, we had 10 bunnies.
And so the number of bunnies doubled?
Yeah, 10 bunnies.
Double
the rabbits survived, yeah.
So there were five bunnies left.
Yeah. And then we had two Lynx, they caught two bunnies. And two Lynx survived. And now we have eight rabbits. Okay. So, yeah.
16.
Yeah. Okay, 5. Okay, 5. Okay, so Team Bunny. Okay, so let's try to distribute these. Okay.
So there can be more than one bunny in this way.
Yeah, there could be totally more than one bunny in this way. Eventually, you guys are going to be eating a lot.
I think this is here.
Yeah, you can put that there. Okay, here you guys go. Okay, you can go first. Okay, awesome. So let's say, do you want two? Yeah, you want two, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so you get two. Oh. Okay, so I'm sorry you died.
Yeah.
But don't worry, she'll reproduce quickly. Okay, right, because she can eat three, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so as soon as she eats three. Okay. Aaron?
Uh-huh.
Okay. So, two bunnies were eaten.
Okay. So, two rabbits caught.
Two rabbits caught. There were two Lynx to begin with.
Okay.
One Lynx survived. And 14 rabbits survived.
Okay.
Okay. So now we have to get 14 new chips. So, 5... Oh, whatever. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14.
That's 5. Let's see. Okay, let's
put
these up, actually. Yeah, so.
Okay. So, do you
want to
try? Okay.
5. Who else?
So, try to go for the high density population. So that looks like a really good square.
Which one is that one?
That one, we can make it go on this one.
What do you got? I got
a thing. Oh. We'll give her one.
A low gas, okay.
That one was kind of
Nobody
in there.
Those
three, right?
That was one. You got one.
You guys,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
From the other one before.
That was two. So you haven't gotten a new one, new Lynx, but you'll get one soon because I'm about to put a lot of chips on the board. Okay. We have results. Okay. So one Lynx caught one bunny.
Okay, so there was one Lynx.
Caught one bunny.
One rabbit caught only one.
Yeah, no, that's an anomaly. And one Lynx survived, and 13 bunnies survived. But now we're going to put 13 more bunnies on the board. Oh, sorry, 27.
Okay.
Wow. Six.
So you guys were all too high. Only
eight.
A single bunny.
9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25,
26, 27. Okay.
So Team Bunny.
Does Lynx always win? I mean, lose?
No, actually, you're gonna, the bunny population is gonna start going up now, and so you have a really high chance of, getting three.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so here you go. Try to get three. Okay, so why don't we say you got this square?
Oh,
yeah, so you got a ton of bunnies this time.
How many?
Okay.
It's like five.
And you guys missed one here. Okay. Okay. One of these guys was yours. Okay. So you got five bunnies this time.
Whoa.
So you have a new lynx. Okay. So yeah, five bunnies caught.
If it was six, would it be two?
Yeah, had you gotten six, you would have gotten two. Okay, so now we have one lynx. Okay, and you should have one new column, Aaron. It should be new baby lynx. Yeah. Okay. So Team Lynx is growing. So she caught five bunnies, so she got one new baby lynx.
Is this the first baby lynx?
Yeah. Yeah, this is the first baby lynx. The other lynx happened because of immigration, because we cheated a little.
is there another column for immigration?
No, that was just at the beginning of the game to get it on the foot.
Okay.
Is that for after that whole board fills up, then, is that?
That's for the other turns. No, that was immigration. I had immigration at the beginning of the game to have it, get it started so nothing died out. okay, so five bunnies got eaten.
Okay. And one lynx survived. And how many
rabbits left? We haven't added more. Okay, now I have to add 27. Okay.
I'm gonna add 40.
Yeah, now I have to add 49.
Yeah, I think that's zero.
Aaron, I think you want a zero in that column and a one in the one under it. Yeah. Okay, cool. Now we have to add 49 new bunnies. Okay. Can you guys, do you want to count 20 out of there and I'll count 20 and you can get 9? Okay, 5, 6,
7, 10,
11,
12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19. I got
10. 20. Okay.
I have 9.
You have 9? Okay, so 10 more. Okay, so I have 2 more. I'll get 10 more, guys. Okay, so. Are you guys putting 10 more?
No, we got 10.
You got 10?
I mean, okay. We got 20.
You got 20? Okay, then let me take 6 out of here because I already put 6 more in.
It looks like it.
8.
Okay.
Raise your hand if you think the lynxes are going to survive this round. Well, it's not, it's not
okay.
Right? There's an entry
equivalent
on that board. What do you think
the chances
are?
Yeah. Do you see how the
bunnies
are growing?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a very high chance of us getting lost.
Yeah, and especially since you're two guys now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, guys. Okay.
You can go first.
Okay, so let's take that square. Yeah, she got 3, so we already have one. Well, yeah, but you haven't gone yet. You might get more than one this turn.
Okay, so the first link's cut.
Okay, so you actually, we can give you 3 too, because there's 3 guys in this square.
Oh, 2 new baby lynxes.
Yeah, okay, so we got
2 baby lynxes.
Yeah, so you guys got 2 baby lynxes. So we can get 2 more people up here if they want to be on Team Lynx. Okay, you guys want to come up? Oh, they got their hands up first. You can come up the next generation. Okay, cool. So now we have 4 lynxes. So we got 6 bunnies.
Okay. So guys, how many rabbits survived this round? Somebody in the audience. Sorry? 60? 92.
Okay, guys, we have to somehow pick up 92 of these. 92. So why don't you do 20, you do 20, you do 20, you do 20, and I'll do 12.
Okay.
4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Okay.
How many rabbits?
This does not happen in nature. Team Lynx does not usually help Team Rabbit.
All right, so it looks like everybody was, again, too high. The number of rabbits caught. Somebody gets 5.
20. Okay, so if you guys have 20, you guys want to spread them apart? Like, just, like, toss them on the board and see where they land? It'll, let's even it out a teensy bit. Okay. Yeah, awesome. Okay, cool. You guys two can just, like, spread the rabbits on.
Yeah, the rabbits are using very quickly. When do you think the rabbit population is going to stop growing?
Okay. How far are we gonna go? We're gonna go very far with the bunnies. Okay, 1 lynx, 2 lynx, 3 lynx, 4 lynx. Okay. Okay, guys, aim for the high spots. Oops. Oh yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay.
How many was that?
This is a lot. Okay, that was 1 lynx. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Okay, one of the lynxes got 8.
So that means 2 babies.
Yeah, okay. So, let's get these guys. Okay.
Alright, so the first lynx got 8, yeah.
The second lynx got 4.
That's 12.
Yeah, but, so what we're gonna do is, we're not going to take the cumulative number of rabbits taken. Each lynx reproduces if it gets 3 or more. So he had 2 new lynxes. You had 1 new lynx because it was 8 and 4. And then now you guys. Okay. Okay. Okay, let's take this square.
That's a lot, too.
Oh.
The rabbits make another predictive.
Yeah, it's a limiting resource, yeah. Well, I mean, so you can also write models for competition for resources. Okay, so another one got 6. So that's 2 new lynxes right there, and now it's your turn.
Okay.
Okay, which one, which square do you want? You can choose this one or this one.
That one.
That one, okay. So let's get these guys. Okay, did one of those jump over there? The bunnies are jumping away from me.
I wonder why.
Okay, so so you caught 5. Okay, so we had, I think 6 new lynxes.
Okay.
And yeah, that's a lot.
I only have 10.
So that's 5. Yeah, that means more people get to come up here. 8, 10, 11. 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24. So 24 rabbits got caught.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
And all the lynxes survived?
All the lynxes survived, yeah. I think all the lynxes reproduced, actually. Okay.
We have 4 more spots, though.
So we have 6. We have 4 more spots if anybody else wants to play. Okay, so we have. Okay, so people are going to be playing multiple lynxes now. Okay. here, you can have 2. Right, you can have 2 too, I guess. Okay, and now I think almost everyone can have 2. And here you can have 2. So, and here, somebody's gonna. Yeah, everybody's playing 2.
Do 2?
Oh, yeah, okay. Okay. And you can. Do you mind playing 1?
Okay.
Okay, and you can play 1. Okay. Cool.
Whew.
30 under 20. yikes. Okay, guys, this is gonna. Okay, 20 each, okay? And then we'll see where. So we're. 7 people. So 20 each is going to get us to, okay, to 140. Let's do 20 each first. Okay. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. Okay, guys, once you have 20, just spread them on and start with another 20.
Wait, everyone gets another 20?
Right. Yeah. I hope we don't run out of bunnies.
The rabbit population is so large by now that it didn't really look again. So what do you think? Suppose there were, say... The rabbits by the woodries spread out, right? So that's why the lynxes kept dying.
Okay.
By the time you get, you actually have 10,000 rabbits on that board, right? There would be like thousands of rabbits on every square.
Yeah,
so every lane will be almost certain.
Yeah, I did 220.
I got the large number.
Oh, shoot. Wait, how many have people done?
I've done 40.
Sorry? You've done 40? I've done 40. What have you done? 40? 120?
Well, this is my
40. Oh, shoot. We accidentally added way too many rabbits. Okay, it's fine. Oh, don't do them. Okay.
I only got 23.
Okay, 23. Okay, that's fine.
You put it on,
we accidentally doubled twice because I read the 320.
I have 23.
Oh, well, it doesn't matter.
Put 23 on. She didn't put any.
Oh, how many? You didn't put any on. Okay, awesome. So we should be at 160, right? How many did you put on? 28, so that's 180.
I put down 40.
You put down 40, okay. So we put down way too many, but that's fine.
I put down 20.
Oh, that's okay. So we didn't put down that many too much. Okay, so everybody, oh, right, you guys already have your chips. Okay, let's go.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, wow. So let's give you this space right here. This is a very inexact game. Okay. Okay, and we'll give you that one, too. Okay, so these are yours. No blowing. Okay. Okay, next bunny. Or, sorry, next links. You can...
How many
okay.
was that?
Oh, he's counting. How many did you get? Okay, you can... We'll confer at the end of the game, okay? And once every link says go on. Okay. There you go. These are yours. And then you have one more. Awesome. Okay. Which square do you want? You can get this one or this one? This one? The bottom one? Okay. So. Okay. These are yours.
Now I think the lynxes are going to win. Yeah.
Awesome. Okay, dude. We're confer at the end. Okay, now your turn. That's good. Good toss. Hang on, let me get yours for you. I think one of my bunnies jumped away. Okay.
Oh no. What did you drop? Which ones?
The bunnies.
Oh, the bunnies? Oh, did they... What are those bunnies from?
I'm not sure.
Oh, were they just on the table? They're holding there, so that's perfectly fine. Don't worry about it. You're fine. So why don't you put those bunnies on the table, and I'm going to hand you your bunnies, okay? And then you can count them for me. Okay. There you go.
I got 11.
So those are... Okay. We'll document everything at the end of the game. So you have one more bunny. So you have one more turn. So you have one more lynx. So throw your last lynx, okay?
80.
Oh. We can give you two one. For this square. Okay. Good job. Okay.
Count those.
So you can count those. And now your turn. Okay. Aim for the high density squares. Okay. Awesome.
20 rabbits? Yeah. Okay, so how many rabbits on each square, roughly?
We can keep up with this.
Because, you know, take okay. all the rabbits to
blind them. So do you have one more? How many were you playing?
One?
Okay, here you go. Okay, so we have three more lynxes to go. Aim for the high population. Oh, you have one more too. Okay, so, okay, you can go first. Aim for high population. Okay.
8, 7, 9. I got 9.
You got 9? Okay.
So, three more lynxes.
So, okay. How many rabbits do you think will be
fun? There you go. Awesome. Good job.
I have 14.
14? Okay, you have one more. Everybody remember how many bunnies you caught. A lot of lynxes are being born.
9.
Okay. Oh, sorry. Okay, you can pick that up, sorry. Okay. Do you have the last links?
I have two.
Two, okay, so your turn.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
You're the one
that's a lot.
Yeah, you did good. Okay, and we'll give you that last one. Okay, now you have one more. Aim for over here, those look like really good squares.
Okay,
well, we can give you that and that and that. Okay, so everyone count what the number you have.
Did you put my links?
Yeah. I put the links down. We're gonna redistribute links once we know how many. Okay, so how many did you have?
27.
You had 27. So divided by 3 is 9.
9.
Aaron, we have new lynx is being born. We have one. One lynx produced 9 new lynxes.
Should I put that up?
Yeah. Okay. So why don't you add them? So no. That's one of them.
Okay.
How many did you have?
11.
You had 11. So he had 3 new lynxes. So 9 plus 3. Okay.
Whoa.
13.
So she had 4 new lynxes.
Okay.
How many did you have?
9. So that's 3.
So she has 3. Okay. How many did you have?
I had 8.
So you had 8. So you had 2. And how many?
19.
You had 19, so she had 6 new lynxes.
Okay, so 9, 3, 4, 3, and 6.
Yeah, so 18, 21, 25. So now we have 25 new lynxes plus the 6 old ones.
Okay.
Is 31, I guess?
Which were 6 old ones?
Yeah, wait. Oh, how many old ones were there?
There were 4 lynxes, I thought, right? And then 6 babies?
Right, so we had 6 babies plus 4 lynxes was... 10 lynxes.
10 lynxes.
Yeah. So this is, so you had 10 lynxes plus 25, so in the next generation you're going to have 35 babies.
Okay, I'm
sorry. So 35 lynxes. And bunnies eaten. Okay, how many bunnies did we have?
All right, this is it.
Huh?
Yeah.
27. How many did you have?
11.
How many did you have? How many bunnies did you have?
13.
And you had 9, and you had 8. And you had 19. Okay. Calculator.
Oh, come on.
Okay. 27.
All
right. Oh, he gave up too. This calculator is broken.
Wait, did you say 27?
Somebody caught 27. Okay, so this is 35. And then that's 44, 54,
oh, that's a
65.
Okay. I misread it as a 14.
65.
So 27.
73. 82. 82 bunnies were caught.
That seems reasonable. Okay.
Okay.
Sure. 82?
Yeah. 82 bunnies 82. Were caught. Okay.
Dang.
So.
The bunny population of 320
is
like.
Yeah. So.
Put
our bunnies
back? Yeah, you can put the bunnies back. Okay. Well, they're allowed to be smart in this game.
Interesting.
Lynxes are smart predators.
Right. So because lynxes could take advantage of that variation, prey, then
they would. So, yeah, no. Since we're overtime and people, Right. So we're overtime. So we're gonna summarize these observations now. So at the beginning, you noticed that the bunny population was dominating the lynx population, right? It was growing really, really quickly. But once the bunny population got really high, we had a huge spike in lynxes because they started eating a lot and reproducing. So now that the lynx population, it's multiplied, we have like something like 35 lynxes now. And each time one of those lynxes eats 3 bunnies, they're going to reproduce. So their population is going to skyrocket. And so eventually, the bunnies aren't going to be able to keep up. And so their population is going to drop again. But then the predators are going to start dying out, right? The lynxes are going to not be able to eat. And so they're going to die. But then the bunny population is going to blow up again. Yeah. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. They probably will, but then I'm going to have them immigrate.
What's it doing now? From 184 to 320. Is that doubling? What's the space? 368. So the population of bunnies didn't double by the end.
Thank you very much for playing with me. You did a great job.
Okay. But looking at instead of doubling the population, we got multiplied by about 1 3/4. How about back here, from 98 to 184? Did that double?
Almost.
What did it get multiplied by? So here, we got multiplied by 1.75. Here, the population got multiplied by... Sorry?
1.95?
Well, okay, so this is about 100, right? This is about 180. To get from 100 to 180, you multiply by...
So, in general, do you guys see that the reproduction rate of the bunnies is, it's going down because you have fewer bunnies the factor you multiply by is going down because you have fewer bunnies and a lot of them are getting eaten. So, you have...
These systems, there's equilibrium, but it's mm-hmm. not within one population.
Yeah.
It's always fluctuating.
Right. Right. So actually, I think these oscillations you see, like these offset oscillations, that is actually an equilibrium of the system.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the other equilibrium that you could get is you could get extinction of the... Like, those are the two equilibrium you can get. But in this game, we avoided extinction by just always cheating and saying, oh, they're immigrating. yeah. But the reason that these factors are going down is because bigger and bigger percentages of the rabbit population aren't reproducing. Yeah. Okay. Does anybody have any questions about all this? Does anybody want to know more about anything? No? Okay. Well, thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's the next Saturday morning master and the last one for the semester.